session number 21643, room 1.
One, where were you born, please?
West Bromwich.
Which year was this?
1924.
Did both your mother and father come from West Brom?
Yes.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in West Bromwich?
No, we moved to a better area. We moved to a better area in the early 30s. And my father, he'd had a rough time with the First World War, gas, shell shock, and he couldn't work for anybody. He had to be self-employed, albeit small stakes to start with. And then the war clouds started to gather.
But where did you move to?
Oh, we moved to Smethwick, a very nice area at that time. Smethwick in the West Midlands.
You were saying the war clouds were gathering?
But?
You were saying the war clouds were gathering?
Yes. See, 1924 to 1930, I'll be 6 years old. And there was talk of, they had this, the armistice had it that Germany couldn't do this and couldn't do that. We'd taken the raw off them, we just took everything off them. And then he started to creep back in, Hitler. And nobody did anything about it. And then 1936, I was just 15 when the war started in September. August 36, I was just, no, 39.
No, don't worry about that.
August 39, I was just 15. I met my wife. That was a boy and girl next door thing, you know. But everybody was keen to do their bit. And Germany invaded Poland. As we all know, it's history now. And we had an alliance pact with Poland that if they got attacked, we would go to their aid. And I remember Neville Chamberlain, son of Joe Chamberlain. He did a lot for Birmingham in those days, Joe did. And Neville Chamberlain was Tory Prime Minister when the war started. He actually declared war. And he was to broadcast on the radio at 11 o'clock on the 3rd of September 1939. And he informed us that the Germans had invaded Poland. He said, "I have sent the Chancellor, Herr Hitler," great British stuff this, you know, "an ultimatum that unless he's prepared to give an undertaking to withdraw his troops from Poland by 11 o'clock today, we would declare war on Germany." And he said, "I have to tell you now, 11 o'clock, I have received no such undertaking from the Chancellor. Consequently, this country is at war with Germany." My father and my mother, I was listening to this. A boy, 15, hadn't got a clue what it was about, although my father was an old soldier. And he thought for a few minutes, and I said, obviously, in retrospect, of course, he was obviously weighing up the First World War, those monumental Bayonet charges. And here we are, 21 years later. We're all at it again, aren't we? And I don't know what he thought, whether it was going to be on the same scale and tactics as the First World War, I suppose. And I don't know what went through his mind, but I said, do you think we'll win, Dad? Young boy, 15, talking to an old soldier. And he thought for a minute longer and he said, we shall win, but it won't be easy. My God, how true that was. Anyway, we had the Siegfried Line and the Maginot Line. If we were led to think that the Maginot Line was a French line of defences, were impregnable. There was a lot of talk in the 39-45 war about pincer movements or outflanking manoeuvres. And I think that was Hitler's first one. He outflanked the Maginot Line and came across the Low Countries, didn't they?
Yes.
And he got to near to the Channel ports just before he occupied the Channel ports. And I can see him now on the newsreel. He was elated. Hitler. He picked his knee up and he smacked it. They were invincible. I don't know what went wrong, but there's a lot of humour about Dad's army. But when you think about it, all we had was old soldiers. Old soldiers ready to do their bit again. They hadn't even got the old World War Ross rifle. They hadn't got anything. But they soon got some of those out to them, I think. They made a drill with broomsticks. All funny stuff now. But I think what Churchill had in mind when he said, you know, his famous speech, we will fight them on the beaches, in the hills and here there. I think what he had was guerrilla warfare, which we hadn't really knew anything about then, you see. I think. And as regards invasion from a German fleet, there was talk about setting the sea alight should an armada approach our island that is pouring oil onto the sea, much like you saw in Kuwait recently. Oh, yes, yeah.
What was life like as a young boy in Smethwick in the early days of the war?
Well, what I've skipped a bit there, as Chamberlain declared war on Germany, I went out into the street and I looked up the road and an air barrage balloon had been hoisted. When you think about it, that was symbolic, really. The balloon had gone up. sure had. And
were you at work?
Yes, I left school. I left school in 1938, just before my 14th birthday. I've got a ticket upstairs which excuses me from school in case I got pulled up by the school board man, because any young child, anybody, saw walk in the streets in school hours was taken to task by the school board man, as we called him. You didn't get the truancy you get today. It wasn't tolerated at all. It just was not. Anyway, that's another political issue.
What job did you get?
Pardon?
What job did you get?
Well, my father got me... He got me a... I was a job with one of his old army friends who was a dental surgeon. And I was going to be a dental mechanic, or as they call them today, technicians, dental technician. I helped to cast impressions. I helped to blow platinum plates, gold plates. I saw a lot, and I was quite interested in it. My boss, Archibald Sinclair Wildman, he had a partner, Franks, Mr. Franks. It was a big double-fronted house. And Franks was in the Air Force Reserve. And on the outbreak of war, he was immediately called up, Franks. And that cut Archibald Wildman's practice in two, you understand. And he couldn't keep me anymore. So he got rid of me and two nurses. I don't know. That war, you know, you can't just evaluate it in terms of people being killed or wounded. It caused a lot of havoc, that war did. And I don't think the world has ever been the same since. I'm sure it hasn't.
How did it affect you in Smethwick as a young man?
Well, of course, when you're young, you know, you're young and stupid, aren't you? You're all raring to go and you... So I went to work... I went to work first at Geskin and Nettlefold in the Midlands. And the air raids, yes. We had the phony war, you see. September 39, the war was declared. That was an awful winter, 1940. I remember us being 2 feet deep in snow in 1940. No doubt about that. And we drifted from job to job. And some of it, once you got into a job, you were restricted. You couldn't leave. Sometimes you were directed to other work, like the Bevan boys. I think it just turned everybody upside down, that war did.
Can you tell me about the bombing you experienced?
The bombing, yes, the bombing was, we used to be up all night fighting incendiary bombs, putting fires out. And when they went bombing, we'd be on fire watching. This is a young boy of 15. And then we went to work through the rubble in the morning. I had a push bike, and I used to bike a good 3 miles to work. And when we'd done our shift, we'd come home, get washed and something to eat, such as my mother could provide. And then we'd go back to work for fire watching. So we were fire watching at work and at home. Not too much chance to get into anything for us young fellas. Not that we wanted to then.
Did Smedic get much bombing?
Oh, yes. First of all, it didn't seem much. And then the talk would go around ball pits had been hit. Somewhere else had been hit. Ball pits where they used to make pots, pans and kettles. And I think that probably went over to Woolwork, you see. A lot of the factories then. There was factories in our immediate area in Smedic that had been locked up in the 20s and the 30s. And all the machinery was in position. Nobody, I never heard anything. I never saw anybody go in. Just locks, padlocks and chains on the doors. When the war started, they unlocked the premises, blew off the mothballs, and started the machines up that I'd never heard running. And I immediately went on to war work.
What kind of war work?
Oh, anything, really. Anything that was screws. I worked at Geskin and Nettlefold's on a row of 8 BSA automatic machines. There was just a tool setter and myself. There were rows of these machines all over the place. And we used to do AID work, screws for aircraft. And every so often we'd catch one screw off the chuck, take it up to the view room and get it checked, see that the machine's still running all right.
What does AID mean?
I don't really know, I forget that bit. AID, it was air... I don't know, you could check that out. It was screws for the aircraft. And up the Bristol Road in Birmingham, they'd already, unbeknownst to us, built a shadow factory to build aircraft underground at night. I think some of the Spitfire was built there. A lot of talk about Spitfire, sir. But they... The Hurricane was just as formidable, if not more so. The Germans, when they used to go home and say they'd been hit by a Spitfire, it was probably a Hurricane because everybody was Spitfire orientated.
How did you like doing the war work?
Pardon?
How did you like doing the war work?
I didn't. The oil affected my skin and I got severe acne. But that's all, really. So I left there and I went into a timber yard. My leanings have always been with timber, really. I don't, woodwork. I don't know why, but... I went from there to... I told my boss, Wilfred Holmes. He was another World War I officer in my dad's battery. A case of not what you know, but who you know. But he was very good to me, Wilf. And I went and I said, Mr. Holmes, I'm going to enlist tomorrow. All right, Jim. And away I went, down to John Bright Street in Birmingham. Army Careers Office. I took the oath and the king's shilling. They used to grab you just like that. That was in 1942. And...
Did you enlist as a regular?
Yes. Yes. I couldn't see the war finishing. I mean, everything looked black for us. And I thought, well, if I survive, I've got to go anyway. I might as well do a 7-5, just 7 and 5, 7 years for the colours, 5 on the reserve, and get a bit of a pension. That was my thinking at the time, of course. That's if I survived. But then, of course, before that, I'm overshooting my tail. Before that, we had a massive German attack over France, and we had Dunkirk, didn't we? We had Dunkirk. Boys as young as and younger than me were going out in the little boats to get the boys from Dunkirk. With the strafing on the water. But they went, those boys and men who had private boats, you see. Oh, that was a great achievement. 300,000 men we snatched from the beaches of Dunkirk. Some of them were the guards, of course. And they got them back here. And they put them through their bull routine. And they marched past their CO the next day. All spit and polish. After coming off the beaches of Dunkirk the day before, and their CO cried. Can you understand that?
Yes. Can you tell me where you did your basic training, please?
Then I was called up to Towin, North Wales. It was a heap of Nissen huts built in sand dunes. And it was the old promenade where we used to do our foot training, basic drill. We were issued with battle dress, 2 lots of PT kit, which I shall come back to in a minute. Gas cape, packs. And then every morning, we would sleep with our boots under the pillow because the floor was so flooded in water, you couldn't put your feet on the floor first thing in the morning without something on. And we used to put our plimsolls on, PT kit, out of bed in a January morning, out of bed, straight into the sea, and you had to get your head under. And they saw to it that you did, if you didn't do it yourself. And we'd splash about in the sea at Towin for quite some while. And then we'd come back, dry off, change into the dry PT kit, and we'd go down the front there to... a gymnasium with wall bars, medicine balls, everything there. And they work us out there for half an hour or so. And then we come back to our billet, where we were changed into battle dress, boots and gaiters. And make our beds up for inspection. You just have to fold your blankets, your four blankets, one on top of the other with a fold just so. And lay your kit out ready for inspection. And only when we'd done all that could we think about breakfast. Then we get fell in outside. Get fell in. We'd march down to the cookhouse where we had our meagre rations. Food was short, you know. Food was rationed in Civvy Street. And we used to get, two mess tins. One you had the porridge in, and one you had your piece of toast or your bit of bacon, and that was it. There was no Oliver Twist there asking for more. And then we'd come back and it would be stand by your beds for inspection. So we stand by our beds for inspection. And then we get filling outside and we go down on the front for rifle drill. I didn't know what it was. We were issued first with a Ross, an old 1914 Ross rifle, a heavy thing it was, with an 18-inch bayonet. Well, I preferred the 18-inch bayonet, and I'll tell you why later on. Then, as I'd volunteered for the Royal Artillery, I was posted to Harrogate in Yorkshire, where we trained first on a First World War 18-pounder. And then we went over to the 25-pounder, which proved to be the gun of the Second World War, really. It had dial sight. We were taught to use the dial sight. We didn't do much live firing at this stage. I suppose they hadn't got the ammunition and built up their stocks, you see. And then the next bit, we had manoeuvres. I was posted to a regiment which I can't remember. And we did manoeuvres, endurance tests. They used to take you out. I remember going out with this regiment and doing 3 months training in Yorkshire with little or no rations. I think it was more of an excuse to save the food than endurance tests. But we slept out at night, no billets. Once we left Towin, once we left Harrogate, we had no billets. I never got back into camp again. And we kept Exercise Tiger, January, February and March. Exercise Tiger on the Yorkshire Moors, My God, it was cold. But we learned to protect ourselves from wet flooding. I learned to dig a slit trench where if the water got in, it was drained away. There was no such thing as trench foot with us, not as far as I can remember. We kept ourselves dry, we kept ourselves